15 years. And at this point, he's ready to move on. He's ready to leave. And Laban convinces him to stay because he knows that in Jacob, he's got a good shepherd who is making him lots of money. And this Jacob who's come is the source of his wealth. And so he convinces him to stay, and they have a discussion about wages. And what Jacob said is, okay, see our flocks here. If there's a blemished sheep, if there's one that's got marks, it's got spots, it's got stripes, those ones I'll keep for my wages, and you keep all the ones that are perfect and more valuable. Laban likes this. This is a good plan. He gets to keep the valuable stuff, and Jacob gets the less valuable stuff. And yet, immediately, what Laban does is he gathers up as many of the marked goats and sheep as he can. Sheeps? That's a weird word. Dodgy language, I'm sorry. Takes the marked sheep and goats and gives them to his sons to take 3 days away so that Jacob can't find them, so that they cannot breed and create more marked livestock. Straight away, swindling him. But God will not allow Jacob to not be blessed. And so the sheep and goats that he's got still end up marked. And so Jacob starts to go, Jacob sees Laban. Laban is changing the rules now. Hang on, no, not all the marked ones, just the spotty ones. Okay, so God blesses him and the livestock are spotted. No, not the spotty ones, the stripy ones. And God blesses him, and the livestock are stripy. And we get to where we've got to in chapter 31. And this chapter is a turning point for Jacob. It really changes how he is from this point. Now, Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was and said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said the spotted shall be your wages, all the flock bore spotted. If he said the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. I'm skipping to verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered him and said, is there any portion of our inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us. He has indeed devoured our money. All the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do. As I was preparing for this and going through this chapter, I felt God point out to me that everyone we meet in this chapter is hurting. And it begins with Laban's sons. Jacob's taken all of our money. Jacob's taken all of our father's wealth. It's now all his. And these guys are jealous and they're hurting. They're jealous because here was this cousin who arrived with nothing and now they've watched him overtake their father's wealth and keep going. And they've got that sense of, well, why not us? How's he come past? What's going on here? You see this sense, they talk about their father's wealth, but you kind of get this sense that what they're really talking about is, that's our inheritance. He's taken what's ours. And they're upset. I mean, they do conveniently seem to have forgotten. They are completely complicit in taking Jacob's sheep and stealing them and taking them 3 days away. They seem to have forgotten that it was their father who told Jacob to stay because here's his moneymaker. The guy's there who's making all of his wealth for him. That's gone. They're hurting. They're jealous. And what we know about hurt and pain is it's not that rational. If it hurts, it hurts, whoever the fault is. And Jacob is fully aware of this. And so we come to Jacob. Jacob is in a lot of pain. Here he is, this good shepherd who has been asked to stay on because he is so good. This good shepherd who has worked tirelessly day after day, year after year, 20 years, and still cheated, deceived. And when we look at some of the language that's used by Laban later, we'll see that he's seen as a slave. Now, I keep saying that Jacob was a good shepherd. And, you know, when we're on this side of history as Christians, we hear the words good shepherd. And who's it make it think of? Who got Jesus? Our good shepherd. But when Jesus said that, I am the good shepherd, his listeners will have heard him say it and thought back through their history, through the good shepherds who had come before. They would probably have thought of David, their greatest king, who started life as a shepherd boy, who coming on as a shepherd boy had used his shepherd's tools to ward off wild animals and eventually kill Goliath. But they would have thought back to Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes, and him being a good shepherd. So how does he show us Jesus? How does this good shepherd relate? Well, look at what he picked to start with. Here's Jacob, who given a choice for his wages goes, I'll take the blemished. I'll take those that are marked. I'll take those that are not perfect and they will be mine. Isn't it wonderful to have a shepherd like that? And that's who he takes on. Those are who he sees as most important. And then we're going to come in a minute to a bit of story, and Jacob and Laban are going to have a bit of a conflict. And they talk it out. And I'm going to do it backwards. We're going to have a look at what Jacob says back to Laban. And this is verse 38. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or by night. Shepherds had rules. Everyone has rules. But back then, shepherds had rules, and it was a very simple system. If your flock was attacked by a wild animal and an animal had been taken, all you had to do was take the carcass to the owner, and they could see that it was a wild animal that had taken that sheep or goat, and therefore the cost wasn't on the shepherd. It was just a loss for the master. There was also another rule that said, if you lose one of your animals, if it's at daytime, it's your fault. But if it's nighttime, it's not your fault. There was nothing you could have done about it. What does Jacob say here? Whether by day or by night, whether by torn by wild beasts, I bore the loss myself. And points us to Jesus, who on the cross took the losses himself, though not his fault. They're all on him. And so Jacob, he chooses those, as 1 Corinthians says, were low and despised in this world. He chooses those of us who, as Samuel was getting to anoint David, said, the Lord sees not as man sees. He looks on the outward, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And he takes there and he goes, I take the losses on myself. What a great shepherd. And then we see him with his flocks. He's got the field there and his sheep and goats, Laban's sheep and goats all together, same pasture, same weather. But then there's a time that comes in this passage where he calls his sheep and he takes them home. And we hear, as Jesus described when he talked about being the good shepherd, we hear that voice of, my sheep, hear my voice. I know them. They follow me. So Jacob points us to Jesus. He points us to the cross. He points us to the good shepherd. But as we know from weeks in this series, he is not Jesus. And he has lots of issues. He points us there, but he's a limited man, whereas Jesus is unlimited. And so at this point in time, he's hurting. He's done his best and he's still not treated well. And so he goes to see his wives. He calls them to him. And here we meet our next hurting people. Now, if you've listened to any of the talks in the last couple of weeks, you will know that they didn't really get on. They were jealous of each other. Leah, so jealous that Jacob loved Rachel, but not her. Rachel, so jealous that Leah could have children seemingly easily, whereas for her, it just didn't happen for so long. And both of them hurt, and normally you could see them arguing, attacking each other. But then we get to this passage, and they're not. Complete agreement of one mind here. Are we not regarded as foreigners? He sold us. He devoured our money. You see, we all come under rules, and fathers have rules too in this time. They were given the bride price for their daughter, and what they were supposed to do with that is use it to pay for the wedding, and then a large proportion of it would be given to the daughter, to the wife, as her inheritance. But this hasn't happened. See, she wouldn't get any further inheritance. She wouldn't get anything else from the family because she was leaving the family to join her husband's family. And so this is what she would get. 14 years worth of work for both of them. That's a lot of wages. And what are they saying here? We got nothing. No, he sold us. He devoured it all. Nothing left for us. And they're hurt. Really hurt. And so they see it as God's justice that now their father has less and Jacob has more. And so what do they say? Look, if God said, go, let's go. We're out of here. And they go to leave. They pack up and off they go. And now we get to this really weird bit of the story, which I won't dwell on because it's really weird. Okay? And also, I've read a lot of commentaries on this, and basically the commentators don't get it either. That's basically what's happening. So Rachel steals her family gods and takes them with her. And the commentators are going, okay, we don't know why. It could be this, this, this. Could be that she thought that they might help her keep safe on the journey. It could be because of some ancient writings that said, whoever has the family gods, they will get greater inheritance. It could be she really wanted to annoy her father. I understand that. Now, they all work. There are some older commentators, 100 to 200 years ago, who were very, very kind to Rachel here. They said, she took them so that her father would no longer worship false gods. Think you're being a bit too nice. Whatever she didn't think much of these gods. Okay, she hid them in the saddle of her camel. And then when Laban eventually catches up with them later, she sits on the saddle and tells him, I can't get up because I'm on my period. And the writer wants you to know that these gods are so powerless that someone could sit on top of them, even on their period, and they can do nothing about it. Which is a little bit different to the God that Jacob is following. And so, whatever her reasons, Jacob is furious. Sorry, no, he's not. Laban is furious. It helps if I use the right names. Laban is furious, and he comes after them, but they get a three-day head start because he is 3 days away shearing sheep. Those same 3 days that he'd taken the stolen sheep that were Jacob's. You wonder if he hadn't have done that, if he'd have been there in the moment. And he comes and he chases them and he gets there a week later, still angry. And you hear the voice of a manipulator in what he says. Listen to this. This is verse 26. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done? You have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword. Why did you flee secretly and trick me and did not tell me, so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs and tambourine and lyre? And why did you not permit me to kiss my sons and daughters farewell? You have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful not to say anything to Jacob, good or bad.'" He's furious with him. He wants to kill him. And then he comes up with all this nonsense about he would have thrown a party. Yeah, not in your character. But you hear the words, "I could have done you harm. It's in my power. I see you as a slave. I could kill you for this. You have taken what is mine and taken it away. I should kill you for this." But it's not Laban's, it's Jacob's. But in his eyes, what he sees is, here's my slave, my moneymaker, and he's gone. Here are my daughters and my grandchildren, gone. These are my flocks, gone. My gods, gone. And he's hurting. And he's angry. And he thinks that it all should be his, and it's not. And so we have these hurting guys who come together. And then we get this great moment of reconciliation where they say their piece, but then they come to an agreement under God. And it's a beautiful time. Verse 44 says this, "Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I. Let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Then Laban said to Jacob, "See this heap and the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and pillar to me to do harm." Then he said, "The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor," that's Laban's father, "the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. That's a phrase that means the awesome God of Isaac. And Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. Early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his grandchildren and his daughters, and blessed them. And then Laban departed and returned home. Jacob and Laban have been deceiving, cheating, hurting each other for 20 years. And we come to this moment where they stand before God and go, "No, we're going to make a witness here and change things." And they build a cairn. I've got a picture of a cairn here. Now, the person in charge of PowerPoints says that they missed my picture at the bottom of the email of the cairn I sent in. But I think realistically, they just went, "Your photography's rubbish." And gave me this one, which looked better. What you would have had is a cairn made of these. It was a cairn that I saw just over 2 weeks ago on the side of a volcano in Iceland. And just built these. You know, people walk past and every time they put one on. You walk up a mountain. I love going up mountains and hills, and you see the cairns. You know, you walk past and you add another stone as you walk past. It's a visual reminder of where to go, which way it is. It's a thing of safety. And they built this cairn, got the people together to build it, and said, "We will not pass this place. We're not going to come past this place to do harm." And I felt as I was preparing for this message that God wanted to do something this morning with many of you. That some of you here, you're hurting. You're in pain. And maybe, like Laban, you know it's your fault. But you know, Laban came to this covenant, to this place, and everything changed. Maybe like his sons, you're seeing people go past you and you go, why not me? Or there's an outside influence like Laban was to them, and you're seeing that push you in directions maybe you wouldn't have gone. Maybe like Jacob, you have been hurt, you've been deceived, you've been cheated, you've been stolen from, maybe even treated like a slave, and you're hurt. Maybe like the wives, there's jealousy, but there's also really unhelpful family situations where your nearest and should be dearest are the ones that hurt you. Maybe, as Lloyd was talking about a couple of weeks ago, it's about those promises of God that you've had and you're going, God, why not yet? Where's that gone? And you've got hurt. And God wants to do something this morning to help you. And so we're going to do a prophetic thing this morning. We have lots of stones. And in a moment, I'm going to ask the band to come up, and when they play, we're going to get some stones. There's some in a bag down there. There's some in a bag at the back there. And I want you to go and get one, and I want you to talk to God and talk to him in your head about your hurt and place it at the foot of the cross. You see, we have a pillar, one that creates a witness, a place in time and history that will never move. And we can place our hurt at the foot. Say, God, I'm trusting you that you have dealt with my pain and you will keep on dealing with my pain. We know that things won't get perfect immediately, but he will be there dealing with it, and we're going to give it over this morning. Now, I am fully aware that some of you are going, yeah, okay, that's fine. I haven't got any hurt like that. I'm doing all right, thank you. Good. Praise God. But you notice what happens in the story is all of the kinsmen are called gather stones. You see, you can help your brothers and sisters simply by joining them and picking up a stone and going, I'm going to pray for you. In fact, simply by picking up a stone and putting it at the foot of the cross, you're giving them anonymity and you're already helping. But maybe for some of you, as you push in and say, God, how do I help my brothers and sisters? He'll tell you something practical you can do to help. And so we're going to have this moment, thank you, this morning, that you can come and take a stone and lay it on top of this one at the foot of the cross and say, I will not pass this place. Just like Jacob and Laban, I will not move on from this place. I will not go past this without a witness that God is going to deal with this. He really wants to. This chapter ends with reconciliation. This is a turning point in the life of Jacob. From this point onwards, we never see Jacob the deceiver again. He's a changed man. And Laban ends up blessing the daughters and grandchildren. These two guys who've been at it for 20 years, blessed. And so when the bands begin to play, please do come up, take a stone from the bag at the back, at the front there, or the back over there. I know it's going to take some time, but lay it at the foot of the cross and ask Jesus, because he's going to make a difference.